Here at ExchangeWire, we spent the past few months building a new platform called Connect. It helps buyers and brands find the best tech solutions for their media campaigns. It's free for buyers to list their campaign requirements and for tech suppliers to set up an account so they can get connected to buyers. Find out more at exchangewire.com/connect or by emailing info@thewirecorp.com.
The MedTech Podcast, news of the week in EdTech and marketing tech, brought to you by ExchangeWire. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of the MedTech Podcast. You're in for a treat this week, listeners. For the second week in a row, I present you with our very special guest, ExchangeWire CEO Kieran O'Kane.
Hello, listeners.
It's so full of personality.
Great to be here. It's a real honour to do 2 weeks in a row. They've let me out of the nut house and here I am.
Yeah, on a short leash. My very special co-host. Paused on that for too long, didn't I?
What exactly?
Yeah, I'll let you make up your mind on
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Lindsay Rowntree. How are you, Lindsay?
Yeah, I'm good. I was better till you insulted me and insinuated I was slow, but...
Accidental. You are, in fact, the opposite. Speaking of speed, let's get off to a speedy start. First news story of the week I wanted to chat through with the two of you. TV ratings measurement firm Nielsen has announced that they're going to begin incorporating data from smart TV and set-top boxes into their TV ratings measurement. So to do this, it's mostly applicable in this instance to a US environment. They've got an agreement with Dish, DirecTV and smart TV manufacturer Vizio, who are all signed up to be providing some of that data to go into their measurement. We think, because we had a little bit of pre-chat about this, that this is a little bit separate to their OTT offerings. So they already have, they already provide measurement in an OTT context for Amazon Prime, and they use Roku's measurement partner program for that. This looks like an effort to bring together addressable TV data with their panel-based data, which is what they've always traditionally used. So how is this going to impact the landscape of modern TV advertising for the advertiser, for the marketer? As I said, it feels like it's mostly applicable in a US context at the moment. Certainly Nielsen's not used here in the UK for the same purposes, but it probably is used in other markets. So what impact do we think this is going to have beyond the US? Interested in your thoughts on that. And I suppose, what are the pitfalls here? It looks like Nielsen's trying to get some kind of comprehensive measurement across all of their touch points. Are they getting closer to this? And if they do get closer to this and manage to merge everything, so that would be their panel data, addressable TV data and OTT data, is that going to be the holy grail of kind of TV campaign measurement? Kieran, I'm going to go to you first because I know how thrilled you are about talking about TV measurement.
So totally rolling eyes.
Boring. Yeah. No, it's not. It's I mean, Nielsen's been kind of struggling around for a while in terms of like unifying measurement across TV, all the different colors and, you know, tastes of TV, like, you know, so. It's quite interesting that they're doing that. I mean, like they're a public company in the US. I mean, their stock price rose 9% in the news, so it obviously is good news from the market perspective. But generally speaking, yeah, look, do you need a unified measurement metric for all these different types of TV?
Consumption.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose it makes it easier for buyers. For traditional TV buyers, for CTV buyers, to have one metric to work towards. So, you know, it's a good thing. I'm not sure how that works here. Nielsen's very much a US company, isn't it? Like,
well, they do a lot of European measurement as well, actually.
Right, okay.
It's all panel-based.
It's not in the UK.
Yeah, we use Barb, so yeah. We don't have the same relationship.
Good old Barb.
And it looks like, you know, this particular arrangement with access to addressable TV data, that's in the US for the time being. I mean,
yes.
It doesn't mean to say that they couldn't roll it out to other markets where they operate a panel.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the point, isn't it? Like, so they, you said it was Dish, DirecTV, and which are both set-top box, cable
providers
and Vizio. And Vizio is a smart TV manufacturer. I'm assuming this is a US rollout that will potentially they'll try and do in other markets too. But yep. Obviously, like you said as well, they're already trying to measure co-viewing with the likes of Roku. So they've got the OTT covered, but I believe that's only in the US as well. They're not doing that in Europe yet. So in Europe, it's still very panel-based data. But what I'm not sure about is what the penetration of set-top boxes is in the US. Mm. So, I mean, if someone wants to tell me, that would actually be, I'm genuinely interested. But in Europe, we know that certainly there's many markets like Spain, Italy, that have a very high penetration of set-top boxes. So if Nielsen were able to bring that measurement functionality into the European markets, that could make it very interesting. But I just don't know what the prevalence of it is in the US, a market that talks frequently about the massive growth of connected TV and cord cutters and the cord nevers. So yeah. I still don't know in a market that apparently has 170 million TV viewers or whatever, TV households, how many of them are actually using set-top boxes to view TV. But the smart TV thing's interesting as well, because you could argue that it would bring more ability to be able to look at streaming, web-based streaming that's not done via the likes of Roku platforms. So there'll be a greater prevalence to bring that, including maybe even YouTube stuff into measurement too, and try to, I guess, merge that data together with what they're currently using, which is largely panel-based and the co-viewing thing that Roku's doing.
Mm. Is Nielsen trying to become like the audio-visual metric, effectively, when you think about all these different things are pulling in, like
across
it was TV,
the board, maybe. I mean, well, yeah, you know, isn't the ambition, we talked about this just prior as well, Lindsay, to try to move from household level measurement down to individual within a household measurement?
Yeah, I think they'll need to, because I think as I understand it, and again, this is probably me understanding it incorrectly, but obviously, the way that Nielsen works is panel-based at the moment, much like a lot of what Barb does is panel-based in the UK, which means that they will assume a household has four people in it. So when someone's watching something, they'll assume four people are watching it. Mm. Whereas what Roku would have previously done was, if they would have one impression, that one impression is one person. Mm. So in trying to merge those two things together, they're using this co-viewing terminology, which means that Roku will understand that in merging the Nielsen stuff together, understand that one impression could actually mean more than one person actually in a household, and it's being watched at 7 PM on a TV, we can assume that actually it's four people. One impression is four people and not one person. Mm. So this would actually, again, help to look at things on a household level from a viewing perspective, actually from an advertising perspective with set-top boxes. Obviously, you can run household level and postcode level advertising targeting, and often those ads would be overlaid what would be distributed via linear TV. So the ad that the nation would see could be different from the ad that I see as a set-top box user if someone's trying to target me because I own a dog or whatever. So actually, from an advertising perspective, it could make it more interesting from a measurement and targeting point of view for advertisers.
And that's indeed what most TV advertisers want these days, right? So this is actually, you know, it might not be exciting news for you, Kieran, but it's probably exciting news for some marketers and advertisers out
there.
Oh, I
think buyers will be delighted with it. Yeah. I mean, look, measurement is key to making all this work. I mean, it's not boring at all. It's just Nielsen haven't really done an awful lot in the last couple of years to make things exciting about them. But this has moved their share price by 9%. So obviously the market thinks it's a good move for them.
Interesting.
And they kind of they had to innovate. I mean, like, there's lots of potential, you know, companies nipping at their heels, like, so they need to do this. And I guess buyers need it as well, because the audience is fragmented across linear, CTV, OTT, or whatever flavor of TV or flavor of distribution channel you're consuming. If they can lob the likes of YouTube in there, that could be quite interesting as well. But that would be the holy grail in terms of measurement then, like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Looks like I'm just trying to look for some figures about set-top box penetration in the US. I've not got figures, but I've got overall sort of value, something like 20 billion apparently in set-top box consumption, the value of, in the US in 2019.
I thought you meant set-top boxes. I was going to say, that's high. That's very high. Do they have like 10 per household or something?
Americans like to watch telly.
Yeah, evidently.
Yeah.
Too much of it.
Okay, so it'll be interesting to see where this goes. Okay, moving on to the next news story, I wanted to chat through with the two of you, returning to conversations of Apple's ITP update coming forward in iOS 14 to be rolled out in full at the beginning of next year. So news that they're going to be cracking down on the use of CNAME cloaking. If you're not familiar with what that means. CNAME cloaking is the process of disguising a third party tracking tool as a first party cookie. And we again in prep had a bit of conversation about what's a legitimate use of CNAME. It's the process of linking domains.
Mapping domains
rather than linking. And there may be instances where you're using that in a legitimate environment, but in general, not to track people. So this is where I suppose the ad tech industry is getting into hot water by using these legitimate tools to instead overlay them as a way to track and target people. And of course, Apple's been very explicit in what they're trying to do with their update to ITP, and that is to eliminate any third-party tracking. There was a bit of discussion amongst the ad tech community earlier on in the week about how this is a great example of, you know, use of a technical tool that is easily perceived as being nefarious and has no place in the new world of trying to preference first party data in the first instance. So views on this feels like it's the right thing for Apple to be doing. Kieran, let's go to you, because actually you said something extraordinarily complimentary about them earlier on.
About Apple?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're right to do it. I don't understand why ad tech has to go down this route. This is just another way. It's just not a good news story for them here, you know, using these types of practices to do what they used to do, right? And then taking, you know, what is, you know, generally a decent sort of application process and turn it into a way to track people, right? So I don't understand it. I mean, like, Critio have 60 engineers probably working on this. How do we hack Apple? There's no point. You're hacking like someone else's platform where they are deliberately, where Apple are focused on maintaining privacy for their users.
Yeah.
And it is one of the key tenets of their marketing push, right? Privacy. I mean, you've seen the ads, right? They are not going to back down on this. Ad tech needs to move on and come up with privacy first solutions. And I'd say Critio are misguided in this, and then they need to get off the retargeting crack here, right? They need to focus on what they're great at, which is working with retail clients. And I want Critio to become the double click for retail instead of concentrating on this short-term hacking, which is a waste of their own company resources. So I would say, you know, there's people going, oh, Apple, are, you know, they're being anti-competitive because they're cracking down on, you know, ad tech's use of third-party cookies or identifiers. Give it up. The game is up. We need to move on. We need to focus on the next wave, the next innovation of privacy-first solutions around measurement and targeting, right?
And is that exactly what we need to do? Find a new way to measure and optimize? Is that, you know, is this just another example of the industry holding on to old ways of doing things simply because I suppose it's a legitimate mechanism, but it's just been used in a nefarious way?
I think people are inherently lazy. And in being lazy, they will then, and the laziest people in the world are probably arguably the most innovative people, because they're the ones that will strive to find something, an easy way of doing things that will mean they haven't got to actually exert any more effort in the long run. And this feels like an example of that, kind of rather than actually being able to kind of go and get on board with the massive industry efforts to, if we're all agreed the cookie is dead, and, you know, from Apple's perspective, you know, IDFA also down the line will be dead as well, then we have to all go into the collective effort of trying to find suitable, relevant alternatives to that, not try and find ways of hacking the system. And the reason that CNAME cloaking will have come up is because Apple got wise to link decoration and blocked that happening, which again has been used legitimately by analytics companies and not necessarily in ad tech for a long time to enable people to be able to track different parameters and URLs quite unnefariously, and then ad tech gets involved and sullies it and kind of just spoils the game for everybody. And this is a great example of that. CNAME is used genuinely in a lot of different applications. You know, we use it ourselves for sites that are using third party, for companies that have multiple different domains under one family brand. They want to be able to use CNAME mapping to be able to map and redirect places to a different domain to make it look like it's part of the same company.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be used in an ad tech capacity at all. And in doing so, it'll make the lives of people using it legitimately much harder. And they'll have to try and find alternatives. There are alternatives like A and Alias, which are IP based rather than domain based, which could now be the route that some of these more legitimate applications of CNAME will have to go down. But it just feels frustrating and annoying. And I think we just all have to accept that this is like not the right application of ad tech, and it's making us look like idiots again.
Yeah, it's just negative news. It's just more negative news. It's just reinforcing the perception of ad tech being insidious, tracking people against their will. You know what I mean? Like, this is the type of stupid shit that's getting the industry in a bend and in a bind. And we all, there's some great companies out there who are building privacy first solutions, and that's what we should be focusing on. And I think Criteo have to really stop this. They are probably the biggest offender. And they should know that if they have 60 engineers working on this hacking of Apple, I guarantee you Apple have three times as much trying to break their own system to show the faults flaws in their code, right? It is a waste of time and effort. As a shareholder, I'd be really pissed off at this.
So on the positive side, you've got to hope that this is the kind of thing that's going to inspire other ad tech companies to just move to legitimate routes, right? And start trying to solve for those measurement and, targeting challenges. And I mean, like you say, Kieran, why isn't Criteo doing that? They've got a ton of engineers. Surely that's what they should be working on.
Because retargeting is a profitable bit of business, right? It's like with display. But the reality is they have millions. They probably have as millions of medium to long tail retailers and big retailers. I don't understand why they're not focusing on building a stack for these people, right? Whether it's a DSP or whether it's, I know they're doing that, but building the sort of the retail ad tech stack, right, for these retailers. So activating first party data, building their own contextual piece. They could be building something really, really cool, right? Instead of they're trying to hang on to this ad network juicy margin business, which is going to retargeting is bullshit anyway. Like, all you're doing is retargeting the same customer who probably has bought the product. So there's actually nothing new about it. Prospecting is where the value is. So it's frustrating. Adobe as well. I mean, why are they bothering? For fuck's sake, like, this should be. I mean, they're like a marketing tech stack. This is just a distraction for the industry, another distraction, and people need to move on. I'm going to say this every week until we actually do move on.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of moving on, third news story of the day, which also has a slightly repetitive twang to it, but I don't know, we can link it to a few other interesting developments that have happened this week. So the EU's Competition Authority has launched another antitrust investigation against Amazon, this time Margaret Vestager accusing the tech giant of abusing its access to third-party seller information. So that's Amazon using such data and information like order numbers and merchant revenues to enhance their own product offering, basically selling their own products over those of their competitors in an environment which just gives them an immediate advantage. They're specifically looking at Amazon's buy box offering and determining whether that's being given preferential treatment to sellers that use its Prime service. So there's, quite a lot of focus on the detailed mechanics of the way in which Amazon's developing their products, but also pushing and selling them to buyers, and how they're also treating other sellers on the platform. So, this is probably not a surprise, because we know Margaret Vestager's feelings about anti-competition in general, but certainly it's coming at a time where there's a few other complaints being brought forward against Amazon and their dominance in the marketplace. Where is this going to lead us? We, again, like I said, this is somewhat of a sort of slightly repetitive conversation, but it feels like this is a moment in time where we're building a little bit of groundswell, and it would be very difficult for anyone to argue at the moment that Amazon doesn't have a dominant position in the online marketplace, particularly having enjoyed quite the uptick as a result of COVID, as many e-commerce businesses have, where we know so many more people have been pushed to a digital buying environment and online buying environment. I can't decide whether to go to Lindsay or Kieran first, because we're going to unleash the beast on this one, aren't we? Go,
no,
Kieran.
I'm quite relaxed.
Okay, go.
You are, well, you are relaxed. Are you?
Yeah.
Go then.
Well, I think it's... I think it's
you first.
It's overdue.
Yep.
I think the notion that big is beautiful is going out the window in terms of like businesses. I think Margaret Vestager has a fairly strong case against Amazon and how they use data. And remember, we talked about this before the podcast. Amazon are using the whole, well, the supermarkets do it with yellow label brands, yes, right? They use data and they do that. But this is totally different, right? This is a massive, this is the biggest marketplace in the world, right? It has unbelievable access and it is killing small direct-to-consumer brands, because most of them are, by copying their product, using the data to sell their own brands, basically.
Yeah.
And the gatekeeper legislation that's sitting in Germany and at the EU level is going to become a thing. I would prefer Amazon just to be a marketplace. I don't want them competing. They shouldn't compete. They shouldn't be able to leverage their marketplace. And this is what's coming. This is just the start. This is just the start of it. Now, so let's, interesting. So I was going to say,
yeah, but I was going to say, let's get into that in a minute. I know exactly where you're going to go. I want to hear from Lindsay first, because you raise an interesting point, Ciaran, which is, you know, isn't this, won't Amazon argue that this is very similar to supermarkets creating their own brand? But supermarket shopping is entirely different to e-commerce shopping, particularly if you're shopping on a platform that, you know, owns the entire infrastructure, yep, of the platform, and they know ways in which to push their products forward. I mean,
no,
you
choice.
Don't even see, you don't even see the competitors, right? Lindsay, your point of view.
Yeah, I think that the Amazon definitely have the advantage here, and what supermarkets do, you know, has been argued for a long time, is also not particularly competitive either. But what they do is they do still, they have a very good idea of when consumers come into a supermarket, where their eyes go and what they're doing and how they move around a store. Mm. And they're able to push brands rather than themselves in that process. Because obviously, arguably, that there's potentially higher margins for the brands coming into the supermarket anyway. Mm. What Amazon do, and obviously, and everything in the supermarket is generally clearly labelled as an own brand product.
Yep.
Maybe less so from the likes of Aldi and Lidl. Maybe Aldi and Lidl are a bit, playing a bit more in Amazon's field than the big supermarkets that we know of in the UK, like Sainsbury's, Asda, Tesco. But what Amazon does is Amazon uses different brand names. And what they've had to do recently, they've had to now label those brand names as an Amazon brand, mm, which before they weren't doing. And before, I found that like very, very dodgy, was that you were buying, I don't know, socks from this company called, I think Meraki is one of their brands. Mm. And you think it's just a random sock company, and it's not, it's an Amazon owned brand. Mm. And Amazon have created that brand based on how people are buying socks on Amazon. And that's just crazy. And they shouldn't be allowed to do that and then not let you know that it's an Amazon product.
Deliberately.
Yeah. Mm. There were, I think, something like 74 different brands that were all Amazon owned and created. But you had no idea they were actually Amazon brands. And that's a scary thought.
We actually had an idea for consumers aware of what's an Amazon brand and what's not. Like, these are Amazon brands, don't buy them. Like, support your local DTC. Remember we had that?
Yeah,
idea?
We did, exactly. And Amazon do now have to label the fact that it is an Amazon owned brand, but it still doesn't get away from the fact that they are using the data from all these people the brands that use Amazon. I think to a large degree do so begrudgingly anyway, because Amazon's very much better than ever, you know, like they know they don't want to have to use Amazon. They don't get the data they would like from Amazon, but they have no choice because that's where
they need the exposure.
That's where the consumers are.
That's right.
And to be having your data taken away from you not getting data on how customers are buying your products, but Amazon are taking it to then build products that are better than your, that are cheaper than yours, and then pushing them above the rankings.
That's wrong.
It's just ridiculous.
It's totally wrong. I mean, it's basically like giving all your good ideas to a competitor, yeah, who then rips them off. Yeah. We know what that feels like.
And this is what, well, we do. We actually have a current experience
we do.
Today of what that feels
we do.
Like.
We totally do.
Oh, that was my fucking idea.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Giving ideas from us. But this is why India stopped allowing Amazon to sell its own stuff on Marketplace and to be able to promote Indian brands.
Germany's doing the same. They've got legislation ready to be passed through Bundestag. And I agree with Lindsay. There's nobody trying to stop Amazon grow as a business, right? But there is a line in the sand where you become the only gatekeeper in the space, and you use that then to basically mine data and strip mine the best parts of products selling your, so you can sell more stuff of your own stuff as well.
It's also incredibly aggressive, right? Like, what's to say that Amazon couldn't have been satisfied with just being the marketplace and the infrastructure? We talked earlier on about how they are, you know, firmly in the wheelhouse of delivering of last mile delivery. You know, they've got so many corners in the market. Why do they need to keep
because
going?
Megalomaniacs are never satisfied.
And this is
everything,
the thing, right?
It's the infrastructure. AWS, it's the marketplace, it's the product, it's the delivery, it's the logistics. For me, Amazon are probably the most dangerous company on the planet, right? Like, Facebook have probably destroyed humanity for the next decade until we can muzzle them, until someone like Snap pops up. But Amazon, for me, are insidious, right? They look at vertical industries and they go into it and take it over. Now, if the EU doesn't get on top of this, or the US legislates, and thankfully the Chinese are jumping straight into it, which I'm sure you've got that. We're going to segue into that in a minute. But we have, Margaret Visser has got a great case here, but I just don't want her to slap a fine.
Come to some negotiated agreement where they'll we'll put forward an enormous fine that seems eye watering to everybody else, but is spare change.
And like Kieran, you mentioned Germany there. Germany doing their own. There needs to be EU wide legislation that says that across all EU member states, then this is the ruling of how Amazon operates in this region, and not do it on a market by market basis. I mean, my heart sank a lot. I had to recently get a COVID test sent to my house. Don't worry, listeners, I'm absolutely fine. My heart sank when the email came through saying that your test is being sent, here's the tracking information, and it was Amazon Logistics.
Yeah.
And I was just, and then my COVID test arrived in an Amazon box alongside my other Amazon packages. And I was like, I mean...
They've got everything. Oh. And you know what? You know what's interesting?
This company has so many problems in the sense that they don't let the workers unionize, right? They basically blitz vertical industry with cheap product, albeit very good, and engage in price gouging, right? That is a fact. Until the incumbents aren't able to survive or compete, and what we're doing is creating a monster who's literally going to eat up a load of vertical industries. And Vestager has to make a proper stand, you know.
And the difficulty is though that they've got such a stranglehold, we all become complicit in it, right? So we demand the sort of service level that we're getting from Amazon. We're expecting to get that across the board, or we're in an environment where others are dependent on it. So the COVID test example is really interesting, Lindsay, because at the beginning of the summer, I've had a couple of COVID tests too, all been negative. Listeners, this feels like the thing you've got to disclose these days. And, you know, and I'm sure it was the same for you, Lindsay, principally, particularly if you've been living in London for the last 8 months, you get tested because you're using a COVID symptom logging app, and because they encourage you to get tested from time to time if you're not feeling 100%, because it's really important for their data so that they can learn to work out what symptoms are most prominent and a predictor of actual COVID, and so that they can help the government and everybody else work out who's got COVID and who doesn't.
Exactly,
so
that
we're being responsible citizens. Anyway, the first test I had during the summer was actually delivered to my doorstep by a person in a mask who had been employed especially as part of this program to get COVID tests out to people, because of course there was a lot of people furloughed. It was a new system that the government was setting up, and they were trying to recruit as many people as possible to get everything under control. That obviously got binned, you know, sort of 6 or 7 weeks later, and they went to someone who's got far more sophisticated infrastructure and can deliver
things. Amazon got their dirty mix
exactly,
in it.
Exactly. And so that's what happens. We get used to it. Anyway, the segue that Kieran was referring to is that it makes me think that this is, again, part of the groundswell or what I described on the podcast last week as a moment in time, which is that it's now becoming not uncommon for authorities, governments, legislators, anti-competition authorities to stand up and say, actually, we're going to need to do this differently, folks, from now on. And the example, Kieran, that we discussed before we jumped on the podcast was Ant Group's IPO being cancelled, which is, you know, enormous news, really.
It was right in the middle of the presidential count.
Announced on the day of the election, I think
it was the day after when they were counting the counts, when they were actually started to count the votes, and it was just dropped right in the middle on Bloomberg. And I remember the presenter going, this is literally the biggest story of the year. Yeah. And like in the middle of the biggest story of the year, the presidential election.
And what underpins it was the Chinese government introducing in lightning speed, as only the Chinese government can, or perhaps only a communist government can, introducing lightning speed legislation to crack down on the financial details of companies when they come to IPO. Now, correct me, Kieran, because you have a bit more detail on this. It's got to do with needing to have your finances in a particular order before you can actually put yourself forward for IPO.
So Ant Financial is a fintech company, right, built out off the back of Alibaba. So it was Alipay, right, and the whole idea is obviously in China there's a lot of contactless payments, and Tencent and Alipay or Alibaba have been the sort of the main infrastructure layers there, right? So the idea is that Ant Financial wanted to go public and go bigger, right, and extend the network out. The problem is Jack Ma started talking about banks in China and how they were incompetent and how they were cumbersome. But banks have a certain adhere to certain regulation in the sense they have to have enough deposits to cover off any shortfall in payments or nobody paying their loans back. So there's kind of like, so the financial system doesn't collapse. And finance wasn't playing by those rules at all.
Because right? Probably it was considered under different regulations.
Model. Yeah, so the valuation was 36 billion, right? So they were based on a tech valuation rather than a banking valuation. Mm. And that had nothing to do with the decisions in the end. I think the Chinese government started panicking and going, we can't let one company control the entire financial ecosystem in probably the biggest economy in the world, because down the road we're going to have serious problems, right? There could be like one company could break the entire country's entire ecosystem, having one country control most of the financial transactions. So there's like a risk there, like, you know, a systematic risk. There's also the risk of one company controlling a massively growing digital economy, right? So Alibaba are already a huge e-commerce platform, huge advertising platform. Likewise, Tencent, they own... the massive app in China with all the different
WeChat
with all the different players in it, and they are a gatekeeper. So essentially you've got two gatekeepers in China. Now there are lots of companies popping up, but the Chinese government obviously started to think, hold on, I know we're an autocratic communist state here, right, and we have a free economy, but we can't let two companies control a multi-trillion dollar economy. So they've introduced new laws, and it's hammered the stock of both Tencent and Alibaba. Alibaba's down 20% this week, and Tencent's down 10%. So it's had a massive effect on the big stocks in China, big sell-off. But this is another example of a country, a government, realizing that some of these companies have outsized power, right? And it's not a case of like, oh, Kieran, you're being anti-competitive and American and Chinese companies are great. They're there because they cultivate that ecosystem and that monopoly to kill anybody who's trying to build businesses around them. And that's what we're getting to this situation that Margaret Vestager, right? There is legislation in the EU right now to stop companies using certain anti-monopolistic services until they change their ways. So she's not going to fine Amazon. She's going to tell them, you can't do that.
Use it. Mm.
Can't do that anymore until you change it. So they could stop those brands being sold on Amazon. How cool would that be? I mean, that'd be a bonanza. I might launch a DTC runner brand now, like, while I'm here. Like, but you see what the point? It's not... The argument Facebook made to the US Congress is, you can't break us up because we're an American champion. You can't have all these huge Chinese companies but now the Chinese government realizes, hold on, we actually think the Europeans and the Americans are right. Right? We need to muzzle these companies because we have to make sure the money is spread among everybody, because otherwise we have a couple of multi-trillionaires. The effects downstream are going to be pretty bad because we don't have an open economy. We can't let people have the aspiration to becoming, you know, a tech millionaire or whatever, right? You shut that out. You shut out innovation. We become fat and lazy. We don't innovate anymore because two companies control that.
Yeah. Lindsay, what do you think? A sign of things to come in terms of regulation?
I do. I think that, like you said, Rachel, kind of communist-run countries are able to implement this legislation kind of quick, sharp, and be able to stop things in their tracks before they get too large. Something that democratic countries are unable to do. And actually, if you look at the example of what Trump did with TikTok, could prove that how long that dragged on, and there was so much back and forth, and so much against it and so much petitions against it happening. Whereas in China,
still dragging on.
Yeah, exactly. In China, that would have been allowed to have happened immediately. Yeah. There wouldn't have been anything stopping it. And, you know, again, with the likes of India banning Chinese apps, India is not a communist state, but there are some countries that are able to just go, we are in control of this. We do not allow our people to try and stop us from doing things that are right. And maybe there does need to be a bit more of that when it comes to regulation in these regards, because it will stop the, I'll say the word again, megalomaniacs from being able to take over the way they have done.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, we've just about run out of time. But the interesting thing about this is that, you know, when we started the conversation before we started recording, Kieran, what did you say? That Amazon was your least favourite of the big four this week. So we've decided we're going to start taking a tally, weekly tally.
I'm sure last week it was Apple. I'm sure the week before that was Facebook. So I've written down in my notebook, Kieran versus Gaffer. We've got 12th of November. 13th of November, well, 12th of November, Amazon. Right. And I guarantee you next week it'll be different.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I mean, they all have their foibles when it comes to a certain segment, right? So for ad tech, it's got to be Google.
Can't decide which one's your favourite child.
It's a snail race.
It's
got
to be Google. I think for the general economy, I think it's Amazon. I think for the health of democracy and institutions, it's Facebook. And Apple is just Apple. They'll just do whatever it takes to make money. So they all have... At the end of the day, they're all monopolies and they all should be broken up. I mean, that's my view. I generally don't... I'm a capitalist at heart. I believe in fair, free trade and open economies, right? And when you have... Particularly our own digital economy, but when you have four companies controlling that...
Dominating everything. That's not free and open. It's not innovative. It's not competitive.
If you launch a website... Yeah, your first port of call is Google and Facebook. They already have you, you know, they control the whole ecosystem, right? So like distribution, advertising, you know, ad tech, it's insidious. And then it's like, oh no, but we're good. Here's some money for the publishers. We're good people.
Here's some money for the publishers. We must check in with how that's...
Nick Clegg, the biggest ball bag in politics.
We must check in with how that's going down in Australia, the old the argument between the ACCC and Google. I think we'll have the delightful Gayla Roy from IAB Australia on our podcast in the new year. So perhaps let's have a chat about all things Australian.
Oh, she'll have plenty to say about that, I'm sure.
I think so.
You know, IAB, Google, they're very friendly with each other.
Maybe
just sits in the corner.
But from the point of view of the media landscape, you know, I think everyone in the industry's got a fairly, down in Australia anyway, has got a fairly well-balanced point of view on what that's doing to the media industry.
And I see from Australians, they seem to just say it how it is. Like the PR that came out of those companies was absolutely golden.
I would caveat that though. There is so much innovation going on at the minute, and we are moving towards a world where first-party data, logged-in data is going to be important. So publishers with first-party data are going to be interesting, right? I think with all the anti-monopolistic and anti-competitive scrutiny, Google will be less aggressive towards the ecosystem, so they might open up a bit more. So there'll be room for more independent ad tech. There's lots more channels popping up. There's VR, there's CTV, there's audio. These are all interesting sort of places where, you know, ad tech can flourish. So while these companies need to, like, we have to keep an eye on them. It's like a bunch of wild animals. If we can keep them muzzled, it'll give the rest of us a chance to kind of at least build businesses around this, right? And as you say, I'm sure Microsoft is a huge, another monopolistic company that we should talk about and is left out of that all the time. But by keeping tabs in them, restricting what they can and can't do, allows the economy to kind of evolve around them. So. Yeah.
Definitely. And I like the wild animal analogy because it sort of is in line with your ambition, Ciaran, one day when your time is up. You've always said you wanted to go via the means of wrestling with a tiger.
That is true. Or just being savaged by a bunch of wild dogs.
I think bears have sometimes been in there as well. Yeah. Anyway.
That's the way to go. Bit like a scene from Game of Thrones.
So many similarities. Ciaran's life, Game of Thrones. Okay. Thank you very much, Ciaran. Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And that was this week's Mad Tech Podcast.
Aren't you a technology supplier looking for deal flow? Then you should try our new platform, Connect. It's designed to help buyers and brands find the best tech solutions to match their campaign requirements. It's free for buyers to use and for tech suppliers to set up an account and start applying to campaign briefs. Set up your account today by visiting exchangewire.com/connect or email us at info@thewirecorp.com.